welcome to Episode 7 of The Tangles, official companion podcast to BeneathTheTangles.com. I am your host, JP, known affectionately, or not, online as Japes in Japesland. As you may know, if you've been following our blog and podcast, every month at The Tangles, we like to feature a different staff member of Beneath The Tangles. This month, I'm actually excited to announce a brand new and exciting permanent change to our usual podcast. You may have noticed last month that we added a whole new slew of staff to Beneath The Tangles. One of those new members was Sean Elfers, who you might remember as the guest of our last episode of The Tangles. Starting this month, Episode 7, Sean will be our new permanent co-host.
Thanks, JP. It's great to be part of the team. I really enjoyed being on Episode 6 last month, but even if you guys didn't catch that, or maybe you weren't interested by discussions of art theory, I'm really excited about covering a wide variety of topics with you guys on the podcast. One of our goals here at BeneathTheTangles.com, and by extension, the Tangles podcast, is to encourage the interaction of all kinds of people, particularly within, though not limited to, those in the online otaku community and blogsphere. This means we'll be making a point to feature different guests here on the Tangles every month in order to facilitate that goal. Last month, we featured me, and we talked about what makes an animation, also known as philosophy of action. This month, we're thrilled to change gears completely, bringing on a guest from a different genre of otaku media entirely, video games. Today, we have with us the founder of the Christian Gamers Alliance, Tech.
Hello.
Thanks for being here, Tech. Before we move on to your introduction, though, for those who might have missed last episode, would you mind spending a few minutes introducing yourself to our listeners as our new permanent co-host, Sean?
Sure, JP. I don't want to say too much because I actually did a pretty lengthy introduction in our episode 6 when I first did the Tangles podcast. But just as a brief recap, I'm a myth buff and I'm also very interested in anime and video games. And I'm an aspiring author, haven't published anything yet, but I've been working for the past couple years on a book linking mythology and popular culture. And anime is a big part of what constitutes my breakdown of popular culture. And as a result of that, I become very involved in mythic archetype and fantasy and science fiction. And as we all know, the anime community has some of the best examples in animation of those genres. And so as a result of that, I've kind of been drawn into the community and really come to appreciate it. So that's all I'm going to say for today, but it's great to be with you all, and I really look forward to being a co-host on the Tangles podcast.
Yeah, thanks for being a part of this, Sean. Now, I've been extremely excited for this month's episode for quite a while, as Tech has been an extremely close friend of mine. If you happen to read my latest entry in Anime Today, When Anime Hits Home, I talked extensively about the depression I suffered through a few years ago. Two of the people who really helped me through that time were Tech and his wife, so I'm not exaggerating when I say I wouldn't be where I am now if it weren't for them. With all of that said, even more than simply being a great guy, Tech also is an avid gamer and, dare I say it, a bit of an otaku as well. Actually, Tech, would you mind telling us just a bit about yourself?
Certainly. Well, I am, as mentioned, president of the Christian Gamers Alliance. Long-time gamer, started playing video games when I was 5, started with technically Super Hang-On in the Walmart electronics department. That's for another time. But started in earnest with Super Mario Brothers on the NES. Started watching anime in, I want to say, somewhere between 1996 and 1998 with Neon Genesis Evangelion, and I'm probably still to this day not pronouncing that correctly.
What a start. I mean, man, way to dive right into the total insanity.
Yeah. I plunged right into the deep end, and I've never really looked back. Still enjoying anime today. My tastes have changed, so I still watch at least a few seasons or a few series every season. Still play games when and where I can. In addition to leading online communities, I'm also the father of two wonderful, beautiful, fantastic little girls, both of whom you might hear in the background at various points in the recording. But I will be making liberal use of the mute button to keep background noise to a minimum. And of course, a loving husband of 10 years. My wife and I celebrated our 10-year anniversary last month. So my life has changed dramatically in the 14 years since the Christian Gamers Alliance was established, but still leading, still involved in the community, still enjoying the same hobbies, the same media that I was long ago, still pushing forward with the same faith and viewing anything, or trying at least to view anything I take in through that lens, always putting, you know, scripture and first, and kind of viewing all mythologies, as was mentioned, all anime, all games with a narrative through that lens of a biblical narrative.
Yeah, that's cool. It's great. Now, before we move on to your faith, as you mentioned, could you elaborate just a little bit more on Christian Gamers Alliance? When did you found it? Why did you found it? What do you think makes it what it is, apart from the many other gaming forums out there?
Well, going back to founding it, it was, I believe, 2001. 2 years prior, I had established the Tribe of Judah, which is an online Christian gaming group. We have an official roster. We have chapters for various games. And at the time, I was not able to find another Christian StarCraft clan. And that was one of
StarCraft. StarCraft started all of this? Is that
it? All started with StarCraft.
Oh, man. That's good stuff.
Yeah, and it was largely inspired by my difficulties finding a decent game on Battle.net.
So man, you're taking me back with that one.
And it's kind of surreal. It feels like a different lifetime. So I posted a recruiting call asking if there were any other Christian gamers. It was quite well received. TOJ was established. 2 years later, there were several other Christian gaming groups that had grown up in the 2 years between 1999 and 2001. And the idea behind the alliance was to keep ourselves from repeating many of the same efforts, to come together, to pool resources, to form a shared community. Those groups would still have their rosters, they would still have their guilds, their clans, and so on, but we'd have one central meeting place, a shared space where we would get together, discuss important topics, things that were common to all of us, our faith, gaming, and so on. And anime inevitably becomes a part of that, at least once a season when the new shows start airing. So that's a little bit of the motive. When we first established it, I wasn't leading it. I helped form it. TOJ was one of the inaugural groups. And I believe it was a year to 2 years later, I'd have to sort through quite a few emails to pinpoint the date. But the previous president, who went by the handle Jammer7, handed the reins over to me. I took over. So at that time, from that time forward, I was leading both Tribe of Judah and the Christian Gamers Alliance, continue to do so today. I invest what time I can in those groups. I find myself always wishing that I could invest more, but of course the demands of family life and working 40 hours a week and so on limit what I can. For that, I'm very grateful to have a very capable staff to whom I've delegated most, if not nearly all, of the day-to-day work, and I'm extremely grateful for them and feel very blessed.
That's great. Now, seeing as The Tangles is a podcast devoted to exploring Christian spirituality as well as otaku culture, would you be able to share with us for a few minutes some of your personal religious beliefs?
Oh, certainly. Well, I'll give the Cliff Notes version of testimony. For me, it's more of an ongoing testimony. I grew up in Oklahoma. I was raised in a Christian home. Can't really remember a time when I would have denied or refused the claims that, you know, Jesus is the Son of God, Jesus is good, God is good, and so on. Even if someone had said these are the basic tenets of Christianity, do you agree or disagree? I would have agreed, and I can't think of a time when I wouldn't have. When I was 14 years old, went to an event called Camp Meeting in Oklahoma, which was a youth-oriented, well, not only youth-oriented, but there was a youth portion of the event. It was a very big deal, kind of a stadium full of kids for the last day, and they gave the altar call. I went up, and that's when I made my faith my own. The years between then and now, I am continually finding how much I don't know. Just when I think I kind of have the theory down and I have a decent grasp, there's always more. My teen years, I was very involved in my youth group, but the church I attended leaned toward prosperity gospel. So in a lot of what I write on the CGA forums, and sometimes even on Facebook or other channels, I'll sometimes get a little bit worked up, kind of preaching against that sort of false teaching. So that's my background. Again, grew up in Oklahoma, which has some pockets of what I would call warped theology. A lot of great churches. I don't want to misrepresent Oklahoma, but there's also some issues there. So it's just been a long experience of, you know, searching the scriptures myself. I've worked to stay in church even when I haven't felt like it. I'm blessed to have a great church home now. I'm very, very fortunate to be there with my family. So that's just a quick blurb. That's about as quick as I can make it. But that's summarizing 20 years. So I don't think that's too bad.
Yeah, that was excellent. I always love hearing what all of our guests have to say about their personal faiths, yourself obviously included.
I'm curious. I know I've been saying much, but I've just been kind of taking it all in since this is, I guess, technically our first meeting. I guess you can call this a meeting. But it just struck me how both in your gaming hobbies and otaku hobbies and also in your personal faith, how it seems to me that your particular story seems to be one of, like, just a natural growth, a natural outgrowth of your life. You're raised up a certain way, and then the process is not so much a dramatic conversion, but more of like a slow and deep acquiring of wisdom just over time of like, oh, okay, going deeper and expanding outward. And I'm just curious, I mean, and you don't have to go into a ton of detail. I'm just, you know, interested in your personal life and also in your efforts online to kind of mesh faith and spirituality with like video gaming. How much do you find that people debate online within the video game community? I know you mentioned like warp theology and like different concepts. Do you find that there's a lot of debate and active integration of faith into gaming, or has your experience been more of that gaming is used as like something to create community of similar people, but maybe they don't necessarily debate or fight as much? They just kind of come and, you know, because a lot of people will come and just enjoy their hobby and then not really talk religion or politics, you know, like Thanksgiving turkey dinner or whatever. And I'm just curious to know what your experience has been. How much active debating and integration do you see, like, on Christian Gamer Alliance or you know, or in your area with the people that you're involved with?
That's a great question. And honestly, it's a little of both. It is active debate, often civil, usually civil, but there will be long stretches where people, for the most part, get along. You know, no one comes on the forums and asks, "Hey, is it okay for me to play a game X?" Or, you know, what about the almost annual question of, "Is it okay to play games where I'm killing other characters or killing other people?"
Does Mario really kill the Goombas?
he just makes them very flat. No, you know, we've had so many of the same questions over the years, and I've reached a point where I found myself almost a little irritated, and I had to step back and kind of check myself and say, you know, people are asking these important questions. And we need to be able to give a response that's grounded in a proper understanding of the Bible. We don't just want to give the old knee-jerk reaction of it's just pixels. That for a while was kind of the common response, I think in part because people got tired of the question. But we want to give a deeper response. We want to welcome people to ask questions because we want that civil debate. We want that discussion. Now, at the same time, we found that we don't really have to go out of our way to stir up debate. We're Christians on an online forum. Debate naturally finds its way to us.
Yeah, that color of the church carpet is always of strong contention.
Oh, yes.
I was just going to say that's really like it's fascinating that, to hear it from someone who's actively involved. I mean, I love this stuff, but I've always been more of a loner, and I'm just now getting into the more the communal aspects of sharing hobbies and sharing faith and being involved with the online community. But what has really struck me, and what you just said seems to verify, it's almost like the pastor's dilemma, what you're describing. Like, I preach every day to the same congregation, but on the off chance some random person walks in. I can't just blow it off. I have to present the gospel, and I have to be patient and answer these questions. And it almost seems to me like the online community that has been growing up around video games and emergent technology is almost like – I mean, I'm not trying to be sacrilegious at all. I don't know. Some people might take this as being like sacrilegious, but it's almost like church. I mean, it's kind of crazy. Like the way that it functions and the dynamics of it, it's almost like I think it has the potential to be a really – community-oriented spiritual experience, like maybe you can even get from worship. Now, I'm not saying like playing League of Legends or something or StarCraft is worship, but because that would be kind of strange and possibly idolatrous. But like, I'm just saying the experience of fellowship with other people, regardless of what you're doing. And I think that maybe I know people from like my parents, not even some people from my parents' generation, more my grandparents' generation, would never accept video gaming as an outlet where worship is possible. They'd be like, stop playing that foolish video game, put on your suit and tie and go to church. But what you're describing almost sounds like it has the potential to be a kind of ministry in a church. And I think that's really cool.
And I would agree. I'm always careful, and I've been very vocal about it in recent years. I'm always very quick to highlight the Christian Gamers Alliance and Tribe Judah both as supplemental ministries or transitional ministries. And what I mean by that, on one hand, supplemental, I never want anyone to say, well, because I'm involved in this online Christian gaming community, I don't have to go to church.
This is my church.
So it doesn't take the place of, but I think it can be a very helpful supplement too. And I also think that if people enjoy these hobbies, which are becoming more and more and more common, then they might as well enjoy them with people who can build them up, who share the same faith. And it's difficult as well because we don't want to simply shut out the world, which I believe is another issue that some churches deal with. Our mission isn't to just build a walled garden. We definitely want people out there. We want them interacting with the Reddit communities of the internet where Christians aren't necessarily so well received because we want them to represent Christ with, knowledge and wisdom and tact as well, which is something that is often lacking online. So it's a difficult balance sometimes. We want to encourage people, but we also realize the limitations. We know our advantages. We know our disadvantages to an extent, and yet we're still learning those pluses and minuses every day. I definitely would want to welcome anyone who's looking to grow in their faith, who is a Christian and enjoys games, to come visit us, come check us out, get involved. But at the same time, don't be surprised if I challenge you as part of the community to get into your local church, to get involved, to try to find a place where you can serve, and really to do both online and off, because we should be people, in online and offline. So I think we do face a lot of the same challenges as churches, even though we are not a replacement for a church, but we could certainly be a community that is a good supplement to church.
So in summary, don't let it become your sword art online. Online and offline are separate, everyone.
Correct. Online and offline are separate. There's a little bit of mingling here and there. Some of our most active members will find that there's a pocket of three people here, four people there that know each other in real life, but get together online as part of either Tribe of Judah or another member group of the Christian Gamers Alliance. But they continue to interact online as members of those groups and still interact offline. And not quite a tangent, but I mentioned earlier, video games are becoming more and more common. I think our role has, or maybe not so much the role, but the climate has changed in the last 15 years, that gaming used to be sort of a fringe activity, PC gaming especially, and now it's much more common. There's many more people playing games, so we have the potential to reach a wider audience as well. Yeah. So we've had to take that into account and kind of adapt along the way.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I think we're going to need to move on in need of time. However, I would recommend, we just hired on, which Sean will talk about in a minute, a bunch of new writers, one of which name is Michael, has a focus on video games, which is something we haven't had at Beneath the Tangles before. So I'm excited to see where that will go with Beneath the Tangles. Maybe we'll be able to push some traffic your way anyway.
And that would be great. Thanks.
As we're moving on, Sean will be giving our announcement section.
Just real quick, we have a couple new columns. Annalyn's Corner is going to be posting most Mondays. It's going to feature Annalyn's personal insights about anime and life. It's really good. You should check it out. I've been reading the past couple posts, so I'm excited to offer that. And also Gaming with God, a post bi-weekly on Tuesdays. And it's going to be discussing video games of Japanese origin, and Michael's going to be connecting those games with Christian ideas and themes. So we're just going to be, you know, trying to integrate more and more different concepts and video games with anime, with culture, and hopefully, like as we've been discussing with tech, you know, helping to build a new supplemental kind of ministry, just like an opportunity to mingle and form communities that express through hobbies our faiths and help us to network things that have been fringe up until this point, perhaps, and make them more mainstream in a positive light, so that, you know, we can spread our faith, but also do it gracefully and do it intelligently and do it in a fun way. So we're really excited to offer those two columns. I hope you check them out. We also have a few new writers that are going to be joining us. We're excited about having all of them. Medieval Otaku of Medieval Otaku is going to be joining us. Annalyn, as I mentioned, of Annalyn's Thoughts. Frank from A Series of Miracles and Michael of Gaming with God. And I also am planning to be contributing to the writing portions of Beneath the Tangles. I'm working on a couple articles right now, and I'll probably be posting in a column, you know, infrequently. I'm not going to be weekly, but I'll try to get something out there to supplement the podcast.
Otaku Diet.
While video game podcasts have a What We're Playing section and anime podcasts have a What We're Watching section, since Beneath the Tangles covers more than just one medium and the Tangles reflects that diversity, we decided to name this section Otaku Diet in order to include all types of otaku media, like anime, light novels, video games, manga, visual novels, and anything else applicable. Would you like to share a bit of what has been in your otaku diet as of late, Tech?
Well, I suppose, I'm not especially proud of what I'm watching this season. I'm watching
There Is Grace,
All Noah Zero.
Oh, yeah. No.
I'm watching All Noah Zero. At times I'm not entirely sure why, because this is the first series probably since Code Geass that I have no emotional attachment to any of the characters, and in fact, some of them I actively dislike, including some of the protagonists.
The main character has no emotional attachment to himself.
No emotional attachment.
It's understandable.
But I still find myself having to know, like, I have to know what happens next.
Oh, man, did you see the last episode? Did you watch after the credits?
I did.
Okay. Well, by the way, this is we are recording the Friday, almost a full week before this has gone up. So a new episode will have come out before this. But yeah, I won't spoil anything. But if you watch the episode that we're talking,
we don't have a time machine. We haven't seen the future episode.
Yeah,
yet.
Yeah. Like it's
that would be great though.
No. I'm totally sorry. I'm going to cut in here for a second. I'll just cut this out of my portion. But I'm watching All Noah Zero Two, and I feel exactly the same way you do.
Don't cut it out, JP.
And I feel. I'll cut it out of my my section later.
Yeah, this is good. This is a good admission. It's good to get this off your chest.
Well, it's like I'm so annoyed by it, and yet at the end of every episode, I'm like, dang it, I hate this, but I need to know what happens.
Yes, I was reading an article on Anime News Network, and someone posting about the second season of All Noah Zero said, I'm hate watching it, and they use hate watch as all one word, and I think it summed it up so well. I had previously said I was getting a strong Code Geass vibe from it, which I won't go on that tangent, but I felt much the same way about that series as I do about All Noah Zero.
Well, all I'm gonna say here,
or Noah,
other than I told you so, JP, is last episode topic just so happened to crop up, and my opinion on this, should anyone care to hear it again, is that All Noah Zero is actually a 3-episode OVA written and directed by Gen Urobuchi, and then after the 3rd episode, when he stopped writing and being involved in the series, it actually there isn't All Noah Zero anymore. It's like Indiana Jones 4. There isn't one. There is no Al Noah Zero after episode 3. It just that was
all
the end.
Illusion.
Yeah, it really is. It's just I don't know what you guys are talking about. I don't even know what I'm still talking.
Well, what else are you watching?
Aside from Al Noah Zero, my other guilty confession is I'm watching World Trigger, and again, I really don't know why. And this time, and for this series, I actually do like the characters, but. You know, every time, every season, I'm like, I'm done with Shonen. I'm not going to watch any more Shonen. And somehow, I watched the entirety of Ano Exorcist. I think largely in part because it was only 26 episodes. World Trigger is ramping up to be much longer. And I think that I'm going to hit the same wall that I did with Bleach. Like, once episode 20 hits, I'm going to lose interest rapidly after. But maybe I'll keep watching.
Punching someone in the face can only take up so many episodes. I mean, like,
exactly.
Hot-blooded power. Exactly. I mean, like, you know, Gurren Lagann did it right because they started out punching like moles and then faces and then kings and then stars and then giant mechs and then galaxies. So, you know, they had it
yeah.
done. pretty good blood.
Right. Yeah, but the classic, you know, Dragon Ball Z, Naruto, every fight takes 15 episodes. That wears thin, but most shonen series start strong. They keep it pretty tight in the first 13 to 20 episodes, and then it starts to stretch out. So I'll probably drop it before long, but I'm enjoying it now. I think that's just about it. It's
short
kind of
and
a
sweet.
Light season. I watched most of the first episode of Death Parade, but I couldn't. And I know I'm going to get yelled at. I couldn't enjoy it.
Now, did you watch Death Billiards before the actual show started, or did you just watch? Okay, you just watched the first. Okay, I'm not sure that Death Billiards would have changed your mind particularly, but it might have.
No, it's interesting. I like the concept, but I just don't know if I'm willing to go down a road that dark. If that makes any sense.
Well, that actually does make. Yeah, I totally get that.
It's hard to tell, because that series, like, all right, so we had the episode that I wrote Anime Today on, which was amazing, but dark, definitely. Like, tears were shed. Very manly tears were shed.
A single one. Manly tear was shed.
Manly tear was shed. But then 2 episodes later, we had what my non-anime viewing roommate called Sexy Twister. And it was just nonsense. Shenanigans. I like that word, shenanigans.
Chicanery.
Yeah. But that's neither here nor there. anything else that you've at least picked up?
You know, I often lag behind a little bit with anime, some other shows that, well, I'll definitely be watching the second series of Durarara. Hopefully I got the right number of Ra's.
Yeah, I think you did, actually. It's semi-miraculous.
Durarara is just one of those series. It's so crazy that I can't look away. and it's just a lot of fun. The characters are zany. They're likable. It walks that fine line between, you know, crazy and just Kill la Kill. Okay, I'm out after 10 episodes. Again, my apologies to Kill la Kill fans, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't stick with it. I lost. So
I won't say that I don't hate Kill la Kill.
I don't have the most positive view towards it. I wouldn't say.
I didn't hate it. I didn't really like it either. So I also watched the first, I think, three episodes of Yattermen.
Oh, is that the reboot of the, what was it, like a 60s originally? I think it was like a 60s show. Isn't that like
the 60s? It's a Tatsunoko series, if I remember correctly. Yeah. It has to be because the characters were in Tatsunoko Cross Capcom, which is,
game.
Again, side note, fantastic game, by the way, fighting game for the Wii, great fun. So I've been watching that. Very interesting to see how they kind of flip the original story on its head. I think that's about it. It's kind of a light season.
Well, don't feel bad, because my list is even shorter than yours, because literally the only anime I've been watching this season is Death Parade. So that's like, I can't, like, nothing else even remotely interests me. I was thinking maybe Parasite.
Don't bother.
Yeah, well, JP kind of gave me the advance warning on it, but I watched a couple episodes of it, and I just thought that whatever tone they were going for, they weren't succeeding at anything they were trying to do. And so I used to never drop series, but I got to the point where I watch so much anime that it's very easy for me to drop a show if I think it's being goofy or if it's not going to execute its premise. And so far, I mean, the reason you gave for not getting into Death Parade, I totally get. But, like, so far for me, the only show that has the potential to actually pull off what it set out to do this season, for me, is Death Parade. So I've been keeping up with that. I haven't seen...
Doesn't hurt that your wife likes it, too.
Yeah, that never hurts. I haven't seen the infamous Sexy Twister episode. Actually, she was really mad for the listening audience. But we're hanging out with JP and my wife. We're hanging out a little bit earlier, and JP broke it to her that next episode was Sexy Twister, and she gave me the raised eyebrow, so I may be in trouble because of that, JP, but I'm not sure if we're going to be watching the Sexy Twister episode. But in any event, yeah, that's pretty much it. And then the only other thing I've been doing in my diet is replaying some old games, like PS1 era RPGs, and then also I finally got my hands on Metal Gear Solid Rising Revengeance, or whatever ridiculous subtitle that game has. And you know, I probably shouldn't enjoy it as much as I do, but I am a diehard Metal Gear fan, and I just find that the mix of Platinum Games' absurd Japanese humor with Metal Gear, which is basically founded on absurd Japanese humor, is actually a really good combination, and the controls are pretty tight, and the story is so absurd that it's great. So I am really enjoying that, but other than that, I'm just pretty much replaying older, like, Square era type stuff and some Sony studios like Legend of Dragoon and a couple of the Final Fantasies. That's about it. What about you, JP?
I am similarly limited. I'll run through mine pretty quick in the interest of time. As far as video games go, I just don't have time anymore. I've just been far too busy, unfortunately. It's a struggle is real. But this season, I'm watching Parasite. And you know what? The first season was all right. It had some issues, but the second season's just—it's just been dragging, and it's been pulling some very generic plot twists, and I don't know. Every once in a while, I'm kind of like, yeah, this is interesting what they're doing, but it's just not great. I'm watching Shirobako, which Charles TWWK Beneath Tangles has been absolutely loving, which is surprising because he does not like PA Works at all. But Shirobako is not really typical PA Works. But if you want to hear any more about that, Charles is doing weekly articles on every episode, so check that out. Your Lie in April is the same. Been enjoying that, but that's pretty much Charles' baby, so check out the articles on the site if you want to know more. Ald Noah Zero, we already talked about. Death Parade, we've also already talked about. And which pretty much leaves, like, some of my, I guess, less otaku interests. I've been doing more reading lately. Shocking, I know. I read a book called Silence by Shu Sakuendo, which Charles has actually mentioned lately. I think I mentioned it last month, too. Fantastic book. Not otaku by any means, but Japanese,
agreed,
definitely. And I just finished a book called Shiokari Pass, or Shiokari Toge. I cannot remember the name of the author. Female author, I believe. She is a very devout Japanese Christian, or was. I can't remember if she's still living or not. A very, very good book. Got an old black and white movie that I'm hoping to watch at some point. But again, Japanese, not otaku. I don't know if that counts or not, but I guess I'm the host, so
we'll let it slide. We'll slide.
I think silence is always relevant to any discussion involving Christianity and Japanese culture of any type. I would highly recommend it as well. It's a very hard read.
It's very
challenging, and I think you're left with more questions at the end of the book than answers. But they're good questions, and they're good to wrestle with.
Well, you know what I found is funny, and this is not intended at all, but reading Silence and then reading Shiokari Pass back-to-back is kind of incredible, because Silence takes place early 1600s, all about Japanese Christian persecution. It's a great read, but don't get me wrong, it's kind of awful to read, though. It's very emotional, very difficult, and like Tech said,
right,
it raises a lot of questions. However, then Shiokari Pass takes place in the Meiji era, late 1800s about. It might get into the early 1900s, I cannot recall, but it's all about the growing faith of a Japanese Christian. And it has some similarly emotional issues that are kind of difficult to read by the end without spoiling anything, but it's so much more hopeful, whereas Silence is just like devastating. Shiokari Pass is the opposite. And so reading them back to back and seeing like, oh my gosh, this is what was happening in Japan back then, and then, oh my goodness, like this is what could be happening in Japan now. It's kind of great. But again, I don't want to digress too far. And we'd like to keep this around an hour. So since this week we have you here, Tech, with a rather unique perspective on a different kind of medium than we're used to covering, we're going to have a slightly different topic this month. So, Tech, would you mind kicking us off?
Certainly. Topic is going to be humanism in Japanese games. I don't recall if we were scheduled to limit it to RPGs or not. I think there's plenty of content to review just in RPGs.
You don't basically, like don't feel constrained. If you want to like bring in allusions to other games or whatever, just go with what's comfortable for you. I mean, I can do RPGs or anything. I think the topic, like you said, is very applicable. So, the only thing I want to put out there before we get into it, which is something we discussed earlier, is just like a quick tidbit of, we say humanism, but what do we mean by humanism? And I'm just going to lay it down now for any of the listeners who may not be familiar with the literary tradition of humanism or the intellectual history of humanism. For the purpose of this discussion, basically when we say humanism, we just mean a view of the world, a worldview that emphasizes the innate goodness. And by that I mean like the potential within human nature. It's a very positive view of human nature, does not view it as fallen, and encourages the cultivation of that nature through the pursuit of liberal arts and studies, because it views art and the arts as uniquely human expressions of willpower and intellect. And for a humanist, that is the key. The idea of man's free will, that we have ultimate control to shape the universe to our will, you know, if we are strong enough and if we are good enough and if we study hard enough and try hard enough, we will succeed. And so that is, I mean, there's it's a very complex issue, but for the sake of the discussion of JRPGs, we're gonna leave it at that. And I think you can see there's a lot of connections to even like the shonen mindset, and certainly a lot of connections to RPGs in Japanese culture. So I'll stop, but I just wanted to put that out there, lay out the red carpet before we get going.
And it's definitely good to start with a definition to make sure that we are talking about the same thing. I think humanism, especially when Christians discuss it, is something that can be so broad. It's good to kind of narrow it down and discuss it. I'll kind of kick us off by mentioning I recently completed Shin Megami Tensei 4, completed the game going down the lawful or order alignment. And I won't get into many spoilers, but I almost have to spoil it a little.
Spoiler warnings.
Consider yourself warned, Tangles.
Spoiler warnings. Here we go. The Shin Megami Tensei series is famous for really religion, theology, and just instead of avoiding it, instead of sidestepping it, instead of looking at it through rose-colored lenses, just hitting it head-on, sometimes in a very awkward and ham-fisted manner, if I may be so bold. I played through the game. I logged probably about 80 hours. I enjoyed the battle system. I liked some of the characters, but the prevailing theme was, or at least to me, seemed to be man deserves better than the creator in the story, the god in Shin Megami Tensei 4 is nearly all-powerful, all-knowing, but not good. So you have some of the attributes of God as we understand, as Christians understand God, but yet a very severe twist and a sort of warped view, where in Christian theology, God creates us. We are to be in relationship with him. He revealed himself to us through his word, through Jesus. He's not hiding. He's not out to get us. He's not in a cloud with a thunderbolt waiting for an opportunity to strike. And in Shin Megami Tensei 4, you have a very different God. You have very different angels and so on, and you can align with the angels, you can align with the demons, or in traditional Shin Megami Tensei fashion, you can walk the middle road for what many consider to be the true ending. I don't care to replay the game again to get the true ending, in part because I'd have to make decisions that counter, that run counter to my own views, to my own faith.
Yeah. It's kind of like playing Red Dead Redemption, and you're trying to be the actual, like, loner good guy, but then you're just, like, running around and murdering people, and you're like, I can't.
Yeah.
And then you have conversations with, like, thank you, your actions are so heroic. And you're like, I just killed a homesteader and dragged him behind my horse. It, you know, it kind of not only does it destroy immersion, but it is not exactly a moral use of time.
And truly, moral choices in games are kind of embarrassingly shallow. Most of the time.
Yeah. Mass Effect?
Well, and I was about to highlight EA and BioWare games
Dragon
as an
Age?
Example of that. And unfortunately, they seem to be pushing their own agenda so violently, so forcefully, that unfortunately I don't see that going any deeper anytime soon. I say that in some ignorance. I haven't played through the Dragon Age games. Quite frankly, I don't care to, given the content. But that's a digression.
Well, I mean,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, I'm sorry if I cut you off, but you know, honestly, I was pleasantly surprised by like how you chose to start off. I don't really think it's a digression. I think it's, you know, naturally continues off of, you know, we define humanism because we want to talk about it in terms of this, but you went straight to Shin Megami Tensei 4, and this God is not quite God as we know him. And I think, if you're going to define humans and humanism in the human will, I think that's great and equally important to define, you know, God. I mean, if we're going to be talking about humanism in JRPGs and ultimately, I guess, that the notion of fighting with God and or actually killing God within the context of a game or, you know, at least resisting him or siding with evil, then you also have to analyze, you know, whence this God? Like, what God are we talking about here? You say God, but that doesn't necessarily mean the Christian God or the Muslim God or some pantheistic conception of a force or a deistic power of the universe. And so I think when analyzing the mindset of a writer who created dialogue for the game and who created, you know, perhaps shallow moral choices, but choices nonetheless, the crucial question is, you know, which God? You have to. And I think you need to draw a distinction between, you know, what Christians would call the Lord of Lords or simply the Lord of this world, you know, because it's apples and oranges. We're talking Satan or God here. And so I think that that is a definition that may perhaps be lost in something like a Shin Megami Tensei series because of this straddling the fence approach to beating the game, which is a very, I find, in my opinion, like an Eastern mindset of yin and yang. It's not so much good and evil, it's the balance of good and evil. Not that that's a bad thing, but the ultimate end is simply a balance between these two competing forces, and you shouldn't really side with good, you shouldn't really side with evil. You should simply think for yourself. And I think, you know, that's really important to lay down as well, because almost every JRPG I can think of adheres in its conception of deity to that format or a very similar definition of deity.
Agreed, and certainly... you know, Shin Megami Tensei is not only no exception, it could be the poster child for that viewpoint. And it's sad in that you have some examples of characters who are good, who are lawful, who make good moral choices. And at even one point in the story, again, not giving spoilers, or at least trying to avoid them, there is a character who chooses to sacrifice himself for his comrades. He has seen human nature play out. He's seen the actions and choices of the angels. He's seen the actions and choices of the demons. And he harbors an ideal in his heart that says, instead of trying to violently push our own agenda, instead of trying to get our way, I'm going to, you know, give up what I have. I'm going to be the sacrifice, essentially. And that is one of those moments where I think, aha, like they whoever is writing this almost gets it. You know, there's a shadow of truth in there. And then for the game to twist it is heartbreaking, because it's like they flirt with the truth, but then nothing really comes of it. The same could be said of BioShock Infinite, but again, I don't want to give spoilers, and that is
as well. That would be Western game. Yeah, that'd be done if you started talking about that.
There'd
be no point even playing the game if we got into the end game of BioShock Infinite. But I see where you're coming from with the as you say, twisting something. You think there's build up there, and you feel the fundamental archetypes and the truths, or the axioms, I guess you want to call them, shining through, only to be, you know, covered under or passed over or brushed to the side. And now this is my opinion, but something I'd be interested in hearing a response to. To me, it seems to be a result of a cultural divide. Not so much necessarily ignorance, but a certain conditioned understanding from an Eastern mindset of what even is Judeo-Christian value, what even is the cultural complex of Christianity. And it seems to me that you have this tension between Judeo-Christian and Western culture, which is – and this is a huge generalization. I just accused BioShock, and I'm about to do it, Mass Effect, so I'm sorry, but here it comes. For the sake of time and simplicity, you have the Western Judeo-Christian individual mindset – of the importance of individual destiny and repentance and finding your calling, up against a more pantheistic sense of this void or nirvana, the Buddhist concept of the ultimate goal is to eliminate all individuality and to blend into the flow of the universe and accept the passing over of the good and the evil and the missed opportunities and to just dissolve and let all of your desires and preconceptions be eliminated. And to find inner peace by complete surrender and to actually transcend and overcome your body, which, you know, there are elements of that that sound very great and resonate with Christian concepts. But if you're putting it one way or the other, you've got an individual stuck in this infinite cosmos. And I think in a lot of Eastern games, they come at it from the perspective of this universe is you're nothing. You're just insignificant. So if something absurd happens that doesn't go according to the foreshadowing in my writing, well, that's the universe. That's the whole point of the story, is that the universe is capricious, and that's part of what you need to accept. You know, how would you respond to that perspective, and, you know, what do you think about that?
I think, you know, certainly culture has a large part to play in it, and there does seem to be an open hostility toward Christianity and toward Catholicism in any Japanese media. We've seen time and time again the played out trope of, you know, the Catholic priest in a JRPG that looks to be a kind and loving soul and then turns out to transform into the ultimate villain. And it's so played out, and it's so tired, and yet we continue seeing it. There's definitely some bad blood between Japanese culture and Christianity.
Yeah, we were just talking about silence.
Yeah, keep silence.
And some with good reason, but at the same time, I believe that Christianity will always be met with some resistance when presented to a group of people, a community, a nation, and so on, just because it is devastating to go to a person and say, you know, you are separated from God, you are living in sin. So that's the bad news. And in order for the gospel to have any real impact, people have to have at least a vague, and often it is only vague, and that's enough, but a vague understanding of our position before mm-hmm. Christ redeems us, before we allow that, before we accept that. And to go to a culture and say, you are broken, you know, you are dependent entirely on God, you cannot save yourself, especially to a culture so deeply rooted in humanism, is bound to be met with, it's not going to be met well
yeah.
by a lot of people. The good news, of course, is that God does save us. There is only one way, and it is through Christ, but it is open to all people. So I think a lot of people fixate on the bad news. And then conversely, in the West, I think some people trivialize the bad news. They trivialize the state of man, and they want to paint God as a sort of cosmic Santa Claus. So there's cultural issues on either side. Both
prosperity gospel, I mean, basically.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. We come back around to that. But as far as community versus individual, I really think the early church demonstrated how people's faith was played out in community, both in physical proximity, both in the utter dependence that the early Christians had on each other, in part because fairly early on they were persecuted. They were ostracized. They were driven from towns. They were beaten, killed, tortured, and so on. So community was vital. The idea of a lone ranger type of Christianity is a very unfortunate and, in my personal opinion, a reprehensible mutation of Christianity that seems to be exclusive to the West. Individual faith, of course, is very important. We are called to pray, be in the Bible on our own, but the faith is meant to be lived out in community.
Well,
and
I mean,
so I think there's an opportunity for it to spread in the East on that basis.
Yeah, well, I mean, hearing you describe all this, the concept of the early church and community recalls, you know, the metaphors that are often associated with the early church, which is the body of Christ, which, I mean, is a very intimate metaphor. You know, you have a single unit, and it's almost as if you are cells functioning within to support and articulate the body, and then, of course, Christ being the head. So it's undeniable that that the image of man, to tie this into humanism, is vitally important, and that the people who, you know, drift to the side of humanism to the exclusion of God and his plan for salvation of the world, as you were saying earlier, it's so tragic. It's like very close but not quite. I mean, they get the importance of the human being, of humanity, of the human body, and of the creation and the special nature of humanity. And I think that's expressed in a lot of RPGs. We deserve better than this. We have the power to change not only our lives, but the universe and our world, you know, that hot-blooded shonen kind of trope, and also the idea of community that arises in an RPG when you have your party and everyone has a different skill and you're fighting against something. And I think the underlying mechanics of an RPG are actually very in harmony with the concept of the Christian body, Christ as the head and us functioning as the units. But then where it kind of takes a deviation is the exclusive belief in the power of man's will to dominate and change on his own, to the point where the mutation becomes so severe that you can even defeat God and destroy God because you are actually superior. You have become God yourself. And thus you have killed the god in the game or the boss or whatever.
Your own effort and the tall grass, the grinding of hours, 80 hours,
yeah,
has ultimately ended in your personal, humanly possible ability to defeat God.
Yeah, so be careful you don't mow too many lawns.
You know?
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that's like, that's kind of how I see it, and that there is, as you said, like a real potential for the message to carry, because a lot of the pieces are in place, but my personal conviction is just that the right avenue of approach is not always met. As you said, like when you go and say, hey, you're broken fundamentally, to a group of people who said, hey, we're powerful and creative, I mean, when you start off like that, they're going to look at you and, you know, and turn away. And so one possible counterpoint to that, which I think actually ties into a lot of RPG plots, especially in the Final Fantasy series, which is a series I'm a little bit more familiar with, and that is that notion that is expressed in Christianity by the phrase, the Lamb was slain before the foundations of the world, and that in some sense, the creation of the world, you know, the 7 days in the creation account, when we learn that the essence of God is actually the image of man. You know, we're made in the image of God, and since God is not a person, he's a spirit that is worshipped in spirit and truth, then that animating power and positive force in man is an intimate expression of God himself. And that God, when he created, imbued that through great pain. I mean, it's basically taking the metaphor of the crucifixion and extending it back onto the formative moments of the universe. Through that, you know, all of this has come into being, and through that, man was created. And so I think even though we can see that the creation is broken in the sense that we would describe it as fallen, yet that initial spark and that positive energy, which a humanist would latch onto and worship as its own deity, you know, his own will, is actually put there by a loving creator. I think that perhaps is a better avenue.
Agreed. And it's tragic to see a story where the characters worship the creation rather than the creator. I think that is the great tragedy of pantheism, of paganism. And I would absolutely love to see a series where that is reversed, where the main characters realize and accept that the world is broken, and instead of trying to fix it themselves, submit to a higher power, not necessarily as, you know, one-to-one analog of real life of a Christian God, but even like in the Chronicles of Narnia, where there are allegories and so on. I would love to see a story that kind of runs parallel, if you will, to a lot of the Christian themes of sacrifice, of redemption, that show a loving God rather than, you know, the figure, like I said before, sitting in a cloud with a thunderbolt ready to strike if anyone messes up at any time.
Have you played Xenogears? That's my only question after that.
I have played probably the first hour of Xenogears and watched the first, I say watched and not played, the first 2 hours of Xenosaga.
Well, Xenosaga is not Xenogears. So Xenosaga I've got some beef with, and that actually falls in line with a lot of the tropes that we're labeling as unfortunate. But if you ever get the chance and you have the time, because Xenosaga is a really long game. I mean, it's massive, and even as massive as it was.
Xenogears or Xenosonic?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, I just mixed that up. Xenogears, not Xenosaga, is an absolutely massive game. And even with how massive it is, there's actually debates that the creators actually rushed it. Because if you go onto the disc, there's a bunch of like fragmented data and like stuff that was supposed to be finished that never got finished. And it actually has a really interesting history, because it was actually supposed to be Final Fantasy VII originally. Like, it was in development to be Final Fantasy VII. And we all know how huge Final Fantasy VII became. And this, the Xenogears plot was scheduled to be Final Fantasy VII. But what happened was the overseeing committee actually deemed it too dark and too complex to be published as a JRPG. and they almost canceled the project entirely, but it was put under another committee and it was allowed to continue, and it was kind of, I guess, rushed out a little bit, and all the concepts weren't able to be fully fleshed out, but it was released. And they actually almost didn't release it in the West because they were afraid it was too sensitive and dealt too directly with Christianity specifically, that they almost didn't even put it out. And the reason I'm going on this tangent is because I believe that what you were saying that you wish, you know, you could see, Xenogears, to me, has that, because what it actually has is, I mean, this is a big spoiler. I'll be as general as I can, but it's hard to be too general. The end game of Xenogears is that there's this machine, and they don't specify the alien race or ancient civilization. It's kind of like an Atlantis precursor type civilization deal. Builds this machine, right? And that machine, built from fallen technology, like literally it fell out of the sky, and it's a machine that they discover. It's called Deus. It's called God. But it's actually a false idol that is analogous to the Christian, you know, like the satanic system, the satanic world order. And that is actually – earlier in the game, they refer to it as Deus, and you think, oh, it's another JRPG where it's the Zeus thunderbolt-wielding, you know, malevolent figure. But you actually find out that it was all a deception, and that it's actually a pagan idolatrous system, which is evil, and that trapped within Deus, the energy – it is an energy force called the wave existence that actually articulates all of creation, which is actually God, who has been maligned and trapped within a false image of God, which is, and the game ties it heavily to the Catholic Church. That illusion is there, but that the actual God, by destroying Deus, which is the world system, God is actually released and is revealed that the power of God is actually the force that has been animating. It's like a giant mecha type series, and you fight in these giant mechs called Gears, and all along in the story it's like, it's my will, I'm controlling this robot, you know, the standard tropes, I'm controlling this robot by my willpower. But the big twist at the end, which I thought was really impressive for a JRPG, is it was actually God himself who gives the energy to the robots that you create, and that all along he was the one from behind the scenes pulling the strings against the satanic or the Deus system, that he brought it down to bring life to his creation. And that, to me, like, that may sound like whatever, like high school level whatever for someone who's really into theology, but for the JRPG scene, I was blown away by that, and I think you should really check it out.
Well, I may give it a shot now. I do remember reading there was quite a bit of controversy about it and the God killing RPG, as it was called for its time. But I mean, looking at the New Testament and looking at the Gospels, thinking of those days following the crucifixion, but before the ascension, it would have looked as though, you know, the great rescue plan of God was snuffed out, that it was defeated, that this man who appeared to be God, that seemed to meet all the criteria, who fulfilled all the prophecies, was killed on the cross. And certainly this was the end. There was no more hope. So I can see how you could run a similar route, similar path with a story like that, and that could be very interesting. So I'll have to give that one another try.
Well, unfortunately, I think we're going to have to wrap up because we've already exceeded our time. We can go over a little bit, that's fine. But before we close, just a couple minutes, was there any last points you guys wanted to summarize?
The only place I was going, if you just want to skip to it real quick, was actually the quote from Christ himself, which is very interesting when he's talking to the scribes and Pharisees and religious leaders. You know, he says, "Is it not written in your law, ye are gods?" And he quotes Psalm, I think, like 82 or something. And the word God there being Elohim, which is power. You know, the formal capitalized Elohim, royal plural, is used for God in the Old Testament like over 2,000 times, I think. But the lowercase is often used with like angels and powers of creation. And where I was going with this is that I really think that there is a link between the two perspectives, the Eastern and the Western perspective. And I think even though that there's a lot of confusion in JRPGs and elsewhere, you know, Christ points out and says, you are powers of creation for good. You are my children. And I feel like there is a through line there. And I, you know, really look forward to the day when game narrative can do that justice. And that's really all I wanted to say as far as humanism and JRPGs.
How about you, Tech?
And, you know, I agree. I'd like to see something kind of bridge the gap. You know, obviously in the Bible, there's a lot of talk about how much God loved us, how much value there is that he sees in us. And I think that the view that says, you know, we are gods, we are people, we are magnificent, we are wonderful, in a very strange twist, actually diminishes the value of people because we just attribute that value to ourselves. And we've seen time and time again, cultures that take that view can turn around and say, well, we are valuable, but people who are not like us, they are not valuable. We can do what we will. There is no higher law holding us accountable to treat those people equally. And that always ends in tragedy. Whereas the Bible says, you know, we are powerful, but we are nowhere, nowhere near as powerful as our Creator. And so our power is just a mere shadow of His. You know, we are meant to be creative. We are meant to be loving. We are meant to be in relationship as the Trinity, as in, is in a perpetual relationship. You know, we are in many ways shadows of that, but we are wonderful shadows. And I think humanism, in trying to overreach, actually misses out on something far more wonderful than they're trying to achieve.
That was a good bookend.
Well, if you'd like to check out Christian Gamers Alliance, be sure to check it out at cgalliance.org. But as always, before we close for the month, it's time for listener mail.
Listener mail.
All right, we have two questions we want to go through real quick here. I'm going to go ahead and start with the first. It's from CAM Inc. at caminc.tumblr.com. And Cam's question is, so there are remakes, reboots, and remasters of games drowning the market currently, which I have no problem with. So I must ask, which game would you love to get a remake, reboot, or remaster the most? Answer all three if you're brave enough. JP?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and start. And Tech, you can go last, give you time to think up your answers. Well, for all three, remake, I kind of agonized over this because all three of these I agonized over. But the conclusion I came to for a remake was Metroid Prime 1 and 2. And this is not just an up-res, because they did that essentially with the Wii Metroid Prime trilogy, but a complete overhaul. Because those games have great design. With modern technology, they'd look absolutely gorgeous, and also with a modern control scheme. Now, I'm a little bit attached to the lock-on system in those games, but you cannot deny that it is clunky, which is why they changed it in the trilogy version. So seeing that all redone would be absolutely amazing. For reboot, I picked Valkyria Chronicles. It's not a particularly old game. In fact, it actually just got a Steam re-release, which means that... you can up-res it all you like on your own. But what I would like is not just a remake, which is why I put it in the reboot category, but a complete reboot, reimagining of the series, something a little bit more modernized because it's been kind of pushed off to the PSP handheld scene now, which I like for what it is. But I'd like to see just something that really could blow us away because I love that world. And then for the last one, remaster, I put Eco, also sometimes pronounced as Ico. Honestly, that game to me is pretty much perfect. Maybe some tiny little gameplay flaws that are really easy to fix. But really, all it needs is a new fresh coat of paint. They did the HD re-release for the PS3, which is fantastic. 1080p, I think it's 60 frames, because it's a very simple game. But, man, seeing that with next-gen graphics, that would just be incredible. How about you, Sean?
Remake, I would have to say... Metal Gear and Metal Gear 2 Solid Snake. And those were actually NES, NES, and I guess maybe even Famicom or MSX, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
The MSX computer system only released in Japan. And they were the starting off point for the Metal Gear franchise, which is my all-time favorite video game series. And with how far we've come with the plot and how ridiculous and expansive it's become... And with Kojima's creation of the Fox Engine, that pretty much, I don't know if you follow the tech behind it, but it allows you to create photorealistic environments with very minimal programming and designing aspects. You can pretty much just photograph things and scan them into the game. And that allows the developers to spend more time on level design and presentation and overcoming a lot of the problems with having to create a new engine for each release. I would love to see someone take the Fox engine and remake the beginning of the Metal Gear series as an end and a completion of the cycle of all the Metal Gears, and have you actually play as Big Boss and fight Snake as opposed to playing Snake and fighting Big Boss back from the NES. I think it would be a great way to celebrate 25 years of Metal Gear, and would be an amazing remake. As far as reboots, I'd love to see a reboot of Dino Crisis. I really love that. I think it's one of Capcom's great lesser-known series from the PS1 era. And Dino Crisis 2 has, like, one of the biggest cliffhangers I've ever seen in a video game. It's like this time travel game, and you leave at the end to rescue a crucial character who dies, but you're going to go back and save him before he dies, and then it ends, the credits roll. They never made Dino Crisis 3, and then when they made a new Dino Crisis game, it was on Xbox, not PlayStation, and it had nothing to do with the plot, and you were just fighting dinosaurs in space, and it was a horrible game, and then it flopped, and then they canceled the franchise, and I'm just sitting around waiting for my proper reboot of Dino Crisis. So definitely that for reboot. And finally, remaster, Twilight Princess, one of my favorite Zelda games upon repeated playthroughs, but I think it's really hindered by technological limitations. I think it had a lot of potential in the art style, and I would love to see a remastered up-res version of Twilight Princess with, like, hero mode, better enemy AI, and that would pretty much make it a perfect experience for me. Tech?
Well, I've had plenty of time to think, but I keep coming back to the unified answer for all three. And I'm going to answer with Soma Bringer for the Nintendo DS.
Out of left field. You got me on that one.
Out of left field, yes. And for those who don't know, and that's probably almost everybody, Stormbringer is an RPG by Monolith Soft. We were discussing Xenogears earlier. Same studio. Same studio as Xenoblade as well. And Stormbringer is probably the best co-op action RPG experience I've ever had. I played it through with my wife, thanks to the fan translation. Much love for Darth Nemesis for leading the translation on that. It's a fantastic game. Came out on the DS. A remaster, a sequel, anything would be wonderful. It was never localized. It was never brought to the U.S. And to this day, I don't understand why. It's one of their best games. It features a lot of what we were talking about tonight, but somehow it was still a lot less irritating than the tropes, I should say, were a lot less irritating, and the story was actually quite enjoyable. The characters were for the most part very likable, and it's just a great game. The gameplay design is very smart, up to and including the save points. You can actually drop save points anywhere. So I would have to go with Stormbringer as my answer to all three. If they were to either remake, remaster, or create a sequel and then release it on the 3DS in the West, I would be giddy. That would just be fantastic.
You just explained why it was never localized. It had great gameplay, and it wasn't stereotypical.
And it's true.
There you go. You know, enough said.
They had a skill tree where you could reallocate your points at any time. You weren't locked in, so you could really explore your character. I could go on and on, and it's still one of the very few things I hold against Nintendo. I try not to hold a grudge, but Stormbringer not being localized and there never being a proper 2D Metroid on the DS.
You are now speaking my language with Metroid. Yes, let's instead have Super Mario 3D Yoshi's New World DS 3D Land 4.
Yarn.
Instead of another Metroid. They're killing me. Well, as much as I'd love to bellyache about the utter lack of Metroid in Nintendo's catalog, we have one more question, and it is from Wonderful Catman at wonderfulcatman.tumblr.com. And his question is, I guess it has to be he. Well, maybe it's a she. You never know. It's the internet. All right, anyway. If you could make a sequel to any game, what would it be, and what would you want to see? If you could get rid of any sequel, would you?
I am going to have to give a cop-out answer because as much as I thought, I mean, there are plenty of games I can think of that got terrible sequels, but there were none that I was really super attached to be honest. I started thinking through my list, and I'm like, Valkyria Chronicles had 2 and 3. I didn't really love 3, and 2 and 3 were both very different from 1, but I liked them for what they were. I wouldn't want them gone, and, I mean, they've already gotten sequels, so it is what it is. Ni No Kuni, same deal as it's standalone. I really don't think it needs a sequel. I really like that game for what it is. Ico, Shadow of the Colossus, great standalone games. I guess you could call them... Shadow of the Colossus is kind of a spiritual sequel slash prequel. But, I mean, they're already getting, well, maybe a sequel. Who knows if The Last Guardian is ever coming. And then
we have our doubt.
Yeah.
Still in development.
Maybe I'll put that on my list as a sequel I would love to see, the one that they are currently making and may never finish. sequels to get rid of, I'm kind of in the same boat. I have a slightly controversial answer, I guess. After talking with Sean and my brother at length, I have realized the brilliance that is the beginning of the Metal Gear series, and the rest of it is brilliant in its own way too, but it would be such an entirely different series if it had ended when Kojima wanted it to end, which was, well, really after every single one he's made.
Yeah.
But especially after 2. Like, that series was supposed to be done. But
until the Death Threats came.
I mean...
And then we got Snake Eater.
I mean, I love me some Snake Eater, and I love me some MGS4, and I love me some Peace Walker, and I love me some Ground Zeroes, and I'm sure as heck gonna love me some Phantom Pain. So I'm not really complaining, but it would be cool to see what would have happened if it had ended there, I guess. How about you, Sean?
All right, I'll rock through this real quick. For sequel, Jade Cocoon. It was a lesser known PS1 RPG, great hybrid of like Pokemon and Monster Hunter with, I mean, I know Pokemon is an RPG, but when I say JRPG, I mean like the big expansive world, really interesting characters and setting, not just necessarily like in this place collecting monsters and fighting with an overly simplistic plot, but actually some really good depth to it. And I thought it was criminally neglected. Had a really cool setting. You played as a Native American, which is like I think one of the only games I can think of where you're a Native American, and it actually vibed on Native American culture and like the Great Spirit and the animal spirits. Just really cool. Not something you see come out of Japan very often. I'd love to see a sequel for that. Got some strong like Princess Mononoke vibes off of it, and would love to see more. And as for sequel that I wish never occurred, Resident Evil 6. And, well, Resident Evil 5, for that matter, too. 4 was okay, but I'm one of those longtime Resident Evil fans that really loved the Resident Evil remake and the dark gothic vibe they had going on in the series, and I feel like they completely jumped the shark, turning everyone into these superhuman, superhero fighting men, these globe-trotting biohazard warriors. I just think it's totally ridiculous, and I wish it had never been made.
How about you?
I guess that was me. Okay. Game I'd like to see a sequel for. Okay. I'm probably going to make a lot of people hate me now, so here goes.
Brace yourselves.
I really liked Dungeon Siege 3. I'm going to go out there, I'm going to say it. I really enjoyed it. I know we were talking about JRPGs before in Japanese games, but allow me this one digression. Dungeon Siege 3 was almost, I wouldn't say universally panned, but not as well received as the first two games. But I mentioned Stormbringer earlier. Dungeon Siege 3 was another great co-op experience. And I guess for me, I'm looking more or less for story these days. I still love a good story in a game, and it draws me in. And good characters seal the deal, and they'll help me look past a lot of gameplay issues. But co-op action RPGs are my most highly sought-after genre right now, just because I love being able to play games with my wife. We were really sad when Stormbringer was over, and one of these days we're probably going to replay it with different classes. Dungeon Siege 3 was the same story. We played through it, and when we were done, like, oh, that's it? You know, we want more. So I would love to see another game in the series. Again, I know that probably will not be met very well with fans of Dungeon Siege 1 and 2. That's okay. Different strokes, different folks and all that. As for sequels that I would like to strike from the record, you know, I really thought I'd be able to think of something, but I just can't.
I'm not either alone.
Because... No, no.
It's just me burning in hatred against Capcom over here.
Either because, well, I will say, okay, all right, there's one.
Mega Man? Really, I mean, it's got to be something.
Okay. I really thought that I was done spending money on Street Fighter 4.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yes. Excellent choice.
For Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition. I mean, how many descriptors can you cram into a title? And then Ultra Street Fighter 4 is announced, and I'm like, that's it. I'm done with Capcom forever. I'm never buying another Street Fighter game. But the truth is, when Ultra Street Fighter 4 upgrade goes on sale on Steam for like $3 or $4 or $5, you know I'm going to buy it. Just not even so much to play the game, just to not feel like I have an incomplete product. So I guess I do have an answer, and it's Ultra Street Fighter 4. But even on that, I'm conflicted because I think Elaine is a great addition.
I can totally relate to that. Actually, I've never purchased any DLC for anything except Hyrule Warriors, and I bought like every single piece of DLC, and that's just so shameless and absurd, but I can't help myself.
Are you buying the amiibos as well then?
I have not succumbed to buying amiibos yet, but it may happen.
be strong, hang in there.
Well, unfortunately, we're about out of time, and so that is going to wrap up this episode of The Tangles. It was great to kick off your first official episode as co-host, Sean. And, of course, thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to be with us today, Tech. If you'd like to read more of our work, be sure to check out beneaththetangles.com. And, of course, check out Christian Gamers Alliance at cgalliance.org. Thanks for listening, and I hope you'll tune in next month for The Tangles.
Thanks for listening to this month's episode of The Tangles, official companion podcast to beneaththetangles.com. Be sure to check out our full site for more articles and analyses on the intersection of otaku culture and faith. If you would like to submit a question, send an email to thetangles@outlook.com. Also, be sure to follow our Twitter, @AnimeTangles, and like our Facebook page, Beneath the Tangles, and rate and review The Tangles on iTunes. Featured opening and closing songs are Japanese Dream by Duke Ellington's Orchestra and Blue Piano Stomp by Johnny Dodds, available in the public domain. Again, thanks for listening, and we hope you'll tune in next time for The Tangles.
And I might have to twitch rooms. No,
she's following you.
Okay.
She knows.
No, my wife has had to get a burp cloth. So.
Had to get a what?
A burp cloth.
Oh, okay. I thought you said a burp claw.
I thought you said a bear claw. I was like, grab me
bear. That sounds good. If I wasn't hypoglycemic, I would probably
that be... That seems like something a wife would be doing at this hour. That's the only reason.
That sounds like something I would be doing. I have to be so careful.
I might throw this, if we don't go horribly over time, I might throw this in the blooper reel.
Oh, that's fine. It can be my younger daughter's podcast debut.
Just loop them crying and put a dubstep underneath it for the intro.
And just build it up and like don't drop the bass for 15 minutes.
Yep.
And then it'll be a club sensation.
So The Tangles reflects that diversity. And we defy... One second. Let me collect my thoughts. This is the power of editing afterwards.
Yippee, sir.
Thank you, Eric.
I'm about to leave and go pop popcorn in another room before I disturb you.
Yeah, that'd probably be best. Thank you.
Special effects.
Special effects is what our guest said.
Magic editing go. JP, back to you.
Pop, pop, pop. Oh, wait.
It's a feature. You can advertise it.
I'll wait until he walks out the door.
Oh, yeah. We're avoiding a popcorn popping in the background at the moment.
Door's ready.
All right. Go for it.
You can say goodbye.
Goodbye.
Maybe. Bye. Bye, everyone.
Maybe a slightly more natural, like...
Okay. All right. Well...
This is going in the bloopers reel.
Yeah.
Because I promised, I'm going to shoehorn in a mention of Clannad After Story and Madoka Mystica.
I was wondering.
All right.
They're both amazing. Everyone should watch them. They should be required watching for anime fans. And I'm done. Everyone have a great week.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Okay. I'm going to stop recording.